Hey, welcome back. My name's Charles. This is the Bringing It All Back Home podcast. And today we're going to continue with the analog combo. So this will be an interesting one to go through. If you haven't checked out the previous episode, go ahead, subscribe, and take a look at the previous episode. That was podcast episode number 9, where we started with 35mm film, going through the combo that was kind of all about reliability. This one is going to be, I've got my catchy title for this combo is Beauty and the Beast. So stick around. We're going to take a look at the next analog combo using medium format film. Medium format film. What's not to love about medium format film? It is a bigger negative. It is a beautifully easy film to scan, and it will introduce you to some incredibly wonderful and marvelous cameras. This combo is going to start with, I think, my absolute all-time favorite medium format camera. This is known as the Pentax 6x7. The Pentax 6x7, which is, you know, sort of an interchangeable way to talk about it, was a medium format film camera that went through a couple of iterations. Mine is one of the earlier ones. If you start looking for it on eBay, you'll see there's the 6x7, 6x7 version. Then you get into the 6.7 version, and then you get into the 6.7.2. So anyway, whichever one you manage to get is going to be great. There are no bad versions of these cameras. So the one I've picked up, which I've had for a couple years now, is again the 6x7. Let's talk about it. What is unique about this camera? Going back kind of to the theme of the last episode, this is a really reliable camera, in my opinion, because it's built, if I describe the last one as built like a tank, the 6.7 takes that up a notch. This you could describe as a beast. It is a heavy metal camera. It is extremely durable, and it is shaped like a traditional 35mm camera. There are many different ways to work through the viewfinder, but the traditional viewfinder is you're looking through the lens. It does have a mirror, which we'll talk about in a little bit. It does have traditional lenses, meaning that most of them are not leaf shutter lenses at all. Although I think they did release at least one or two with a leaf shutter. Yeah. So you set up your Pentax 6.7, you load your film the same way you would load a 35mm, pop open the back, put in your roll, slide that guy over, advance a little bit, and shut the door, and after a couple more advances, you're ready to shoot. So it does not go through any complex setup as you would see on some of the other very, very popular 6.7 cameras, thinking especially of the Mamiya RZ6.7 or the RZ6.7-2 or even the Hasselblad system. They use a dark slide, which has its advantages because the film back can be removed and interchanged during a shoot. But it is another step, which, you know, I may sound just picky here, but there's something I absolutely love about the fact that when there's film loaded in the 6.7, you know, it's just ready to shoot. I mean, you just, as long as, you know, you may have to have that extra step of taking the lens cap off, you know, basically hold it up to your eye and shoot. There is nothing you're going to need to do when it comes to that good old dark slide thing, which I never really grew fond of. I found that once in a while, it kind of slowed me down. So the Pentax 6.7 is a wonderfully built camera. It's extremely heavy. You can accent it with some very beautiful different viewers. So mine, again, is the one you just look right through the lens. There are ones that will resemble a TLR, a waste finder, I guess. And I also have one, which I think I mentioned on an earlier podcast, that's sort of a side viewer. So you can turn it on some interesting angles, look down, and be able to get the camera positioned fairly low without having to crawl down and look through it. And really, the best accessory, if you don't have it on yours, in my opinion, is this kind of silly wooden handle that just finishes it up. It's seemingly on the wrong side. The wooden handle's on the left side, so it really doesn't quite aid your grip of the camera while you're shooting, but it just looks so cool, you know. Just briefly, how did I get into mine? When I first started deciding to switch to the Pentax, I had actually been using two other medium format cameras, and each one kind of led to another one. But I won't go down the rabbit hole of talking about them right now. So yeah, when I wanted to get into the 6.7, I surprisingly found the body being sold by someone on eBay right here on the East Coast. It was sold from New York. I mention that because the majority of Pentax 6.7s you're going to find are typically from Japan, which is fine. There's a lot of great eBay sellers from Japan, but you know, a little bit longer of a wait possibly for shipping. So I found my body from New York. I started out with a lens that was also seemingly great. I read some great reviews of it. It was a longer lens, so-called 200 millimeter. Wasn't that thrilled with the 200. And then I decided, yeah, let me just commit to what had been advertised as the ultimate lens for this camera, and that is the Takumar 105 2.4. Yeah, so if you get on Instagram and you start to, you know, hashtagging Pentax 6.7, you're going to find that the majority of the shots are probably taken with the 105, the 2.4, and I'll get a little bit further into this lens in just a minute. That's what really makes this combo. And so as I kept going, you know, I kind of like started with the body, got the lens that really started to shine, and then finally decided, yeah, I need that wooden grip, you know, to really make it. Yeah, so good stuff. One last thing to mention, the version I got with my body wasn't just the regular standard viewer, but mine has the metered viewer, which, you know, when you're looking at a camera that's easily 20, 30 or more years old. I think these guys started in the late 60s. I think mine's an early 70s version. Mine has the mirror lockup mechanism, which indicated that it's like kind of not the very, very first version. I think it's like the second version. Anyway, when you get into a camera that has a meter, you may be like, well, you know, can I trust this meter? Is this meter going to work okay? And classic internet stuff, you'll have an enormous amount of people out there with a very, very strong opinion that the meter sucks. The meter isn't reliable. The meter is a so-called average meter that they'll never use, or maybe their meter just isn't working correctly. I only use this meter. I reached a point where I said, you know what? Stop comparing the version from this meter to maybe one of my digital SLRs or to my Siconic handheld light meter. Just commit, just go for it. Did a couple of rolls, and I'm like, this meter's terrific. So this is such an easy camera to use. It's, again, built like a tank. It's a beast of a heavy camera. It has a meter that works that you can trust. So yeah, pick it up, start shooting, get your focus, look at that meter, line it all up, and boom, take the shot. So I think right now, as a opportunity, which you can't talk about the Pentax 6.7 without this. I'm gonna fire a shot here on the Bring It All Back Home podcast, so you can hear what this thing sounds like. Because this is another reason to shoot with this camera. The sound of this guy firing, the sound of that mirror, the sound of the shutter is completely unique. No other camera sounds like this. So hopefully this mic will pick it up, and here we go. Yeah. Okay, so let's give a roundup about the Pentax 6.7. Is it a cool camera to just look at? Absolutely. I will put this one way up there. You know, it's in the top range of cameras that are just cool to look at, especially if you get that wooden handle. Is it an amazing camera to shoot with? Absolutely. This is where I think it's a complete 10. I mean, just every time that shutter fires, you just get this, I don't know, this great sensation. Like, it sounds really silly, but as you get into these cool old analog cameras, I can't emphasize enough that the way the shutter sounds, the actual sensation of taking each shot, can really contribute something almost indescribable. Somebody at work just recently, Carla, I think it was, I was testing out another eBay find. She's like, "You just like hearing that shutter, don't you?" Yeah, sometimes with an analog camera, it can be all about the shutter. But luckily with the Pentax 6.7, that's just more icing on the so-called cake. You've got a brilliant, beautifully built machine here, easy to load, easy to advance, wonderful to hold in your hands, wonderful to look at, and then it just finishes it up with that amazing sound, that amazing, completely unique fire that you just shot with the 6.7. And as an aside, I think there's a, I remember now, there is a great short video by the New York photographer Peter Hurley describing his love of this camera. And yeah, I think the best part of the video is him just saying, listen to this shutter, you know. So yeah, so that's the first part of the combo. Getting on medium format film, in this case, the 6.7 size, so it's just a slightly different size than, that's another thing to mention too. You know, I had compared Hasselblad with this system, but Hasselblad's and, you know, the through the lens, the TLRs, like the Rolleiflexes and the Mamiya C33s or C330, they're all shooting 6.6. They're, you know, that beautiful square format. What I love about the 6.7 is it kind of gets you off that. And I think, too, that was another reason why I eventually wanted to get away from the 6.6, although to be totally honest, each one serves a purpose. And if you only shoot in 6.7, at some point you're going to be craving a 6.6 as well. Going back and working with the compositional challenges and rewards of a 6.6, the square. But what I love about the 6.7 is, yeah, it has a great ratio, and you're not confined in a way to the way that you need to compose using a traditional 6.6. So yeah, 6.6 and 6.7s are awesome medium format cameras, of course. But I think if I had to pick a favorite, I would go with the 6.7. So in describing this combo, the catchy phrase I tried to come up with was beauty and the beast. So the beast is obviously this camera, the body, the brick and enormous tank quality of the camera. Where's the beauty part? Well, the beauty part is absolutely this lens. The 105 has rightfully been described as just one of the best portrait lenses ever made. Though not, of course, not exclusive to just making portrait shots, but there's an amazing 3D quality, for lack of better words. It has a wonderful ability to get that depth of field effect, which you're going to get with a medium format camera. I recently started listening to another podcast called the Classic Lens Podcast. Wonderful, wonderful podcast about classic lenses. And without a doubt, the 105 is, by Pentax here, is referenced all the time. So that is the beauty. That is the ability to use this lens and just constantly be reminded of its abilities. You know, I think when I had started one of my very first episodes, and I had mentioned that if I had a choice to go out and shoot, I want to shoot film. And yeah, I want to shoot film because I want to shoot with this lens. This Takumar 105 is just so beautiful. It renders amazing. Any film you throw on it is going to look terrific. And that'll lead to our next segment. What kind of film and what kind of developer is part of this combo? So as I just mentioned, any film, any medium format film with this lens and Pentax is going to be terrific. But for this combo, I wanted to go toward the film that I discovered in combination with the Pentax 6.7 and this Takumar lens, I think it was around last summer or last spring, so around the May and June of 2018, and that is the T-Max 100 film from Kodak, especially in combination with another Kodak developer, which I kind of got into and learned to really deeply appreciate, and that is the developer called HC110. So let's jump in there. What is a great way to continue with the, I suppose, the beauty side, with T-Max 100. So since it's a slower film, the 100 film, T-Max is typically going to be a little bit more finer grained. Any 100 film is going to be a little bit more fine grained, whether it's the discontinued Acros 100 or close to 100, the speed film I talked about in the last episode, FP4 125. So yeah, 100 speed film, great place to start. But T-Max is a little different, and it's been described as a more modern film. It's a T-grained film. And I had used T-Max before, mostly on 35mm. For some reason, just had not quite really gotten into it with the medium format. So I decided to jump in and decided to jump in with this developer, the HC110. What shouts out at you by switching to, say, T-Max 100 versus almost any other film? And for me, that would absolutely be its fine grain. It is remarkably fine grained. So when you have the scan and you zoom in a little bit, it's remarkable. Like I don't think there's any other film I've shot with where when you move in, say in Lightroom or whatever editor you're using, and you go in, you know, say 200%, 400%, and you zoom in, you're still seeing such tight grain. You know, the grain is not suddenly appearing like these enormous gray blobs, as it were. The grain is really, really tight. And yeah, I think the fine grain of T-Max combined with the appearance of just higher resolution almost. Again, I don't really think that you know, when things do have fine grain and the subject's extremely in focus, it can give you the appearance that you're working with an almost higher resolution. But yeah, the fine grain is unmistakable. So, and it's a very, it's not a complicated film in the sense that I've never had a situation where, oh, the meter was a little bit off, so it didn't handle it. And it's not so modern looking that you would accidentally, you know, wonder it, maybe it was shot with digital. Sometimes when I've used my other 100 speed film that I'm a huge fan of, which was discontinued, the Fujifilm Acros 100, once in a while that film was so clean looking that it almost, you know, you could almost mistake it for a shot with a digital camera. So yeah, this is a Kodak T-Max 100, and it also too didn't have the issue, at least not with the way Tri-X works, where I'm pretty sure it dries fairly well. I don't think I had any scanning issues with it curling or curving. And yeah, the film is definitely especially this one, you know, this is the 100 version. It is, when you nail that focus and you're using a great lens, it can definitely give you that appearance of extremely high resolution. So fine grain, high resolution, this is the one to go to. But what's going to lead to the next part of the combo, it seemed as if I wasn't really getting as much out of it when I was still using my previous go-to developer. So I switched developers, and this new developer, for me at least, was something that had always been recommended by my pal Jerry Bennett. You know, Jerry has been shooting photography for many years. He's been into it since high school, and I can't wait to get him on this podcast, if possible, if Jerry could join us for a chat. But yeah, Jerry one story I remember Jerry had mentioned to me was that he was really frustrated with certain Kodak films. I believe we were talking about Tri-X. And then a friend suggested switching from the traditional Tri-X developer, which back in the day was always D76. Most labs, that's what you would typically walk into. Great all-purpose developer. Had mentioned, he had amazing results with Kodak films, including Tri-X and I would assume this one too, by switching to HC110. So let's jump into it. In my opinion, these two really need to go together, and let's explore this slightly interesting, in some ways under the radar developer, and yet it has a remarkable history. So let's get into Kodak HC110. Okay, so number one, this developer, Kodak HC110, has been around for quite a long time. Looking through some of the websites about it, Kodak has been making this for quite a long time. I think it says it was introduced in 1962. One of the earliest fans of this film was good old Ansel Adams. Ansel Adams goes into detail about the way he uses this in his book, The Negative. So when I started with HC110, one of the things that I was incredibly pleased with and really took me by surprise looking into it was it sold, I think as in a liter, 1 liter, or perhaps I even found a place that was selling it 500 milliliters. It stays, it's a workable one-shot film that seems to last forever. So one of the first suggestions I got from the website was, unlike my other type of film developer where I would just keep it in the same plastic bottle and use it up within a couple of months, the first recommendation with this was, get a bunch of very small glass containers. So I think the smallest I found was these little glass guys. I forget exactly what size they were. Yeah, so pretty much I would take the container of the HC10 when I first got it, and I just filled some much smaller amber bottles in up to the top and just sealed them up. So by basically decanting it into smaller bottles there, these glass, essentially like little medicine bottles, I think will help it preserve a little bit better. So essentially, when I'm ready to use it, I pick up one of the little brown bottles and begin pouring in my measurements. So one of the other really interesting things about HC110 is you don't need to use much of it. So I believe looking through the literature about it online, it was actually intended, as it originally came out, as an alternative for folks in the newspaper business who needed to get a negative developed really quickly. So they would use a less diluted version of it. And what's unique about this film is that there's kind of like this thing like dilution A, dilution B, or maybe dilution C, or how would you like to get into dilution D or E or F, or the one I use, dilution H, or I think as it goes on. The less diluted version would help you develop your film extremely quick, like under 5 minutes or so. In relationship to the Kodak films, what I found when I first started working with HC10 was I went with what I believe is the one they typically start with. It's just a so-called dilution B, which I believe is like, 1 plus 31. That's still a really, really small amount. So that's one of the things that was shocking about using HC110 is it's a gooey, syrupy kind of developer, and you as you pour it out, you have to wait a little bit for the, you know, it's almost like a really thick maple syrup coming out. And then if you were using, you know, dilution B, you still hardly used any of it, you know. So what I was interested in trying as I developed my first roll or two was to try out the next seemingly most popular one, which is described as dilution H, you know, dilution H, which essentially is half the amount of HC110 as you would use in dilution B, and double the length of development time. And that's where also too it got a little bit interesting, because going through the places online where people were chatting about this stuff, as people would kind of struggle or explain what they like to use between the two most popular codec films, Tri-X and T-Max, there'd be a bit of a variation on how people like to use it. So the recommended time typically for T-Max in dilution B was anywhere from six and a half minutes of development time. And I found a gentleman who was advocating a little bit longer. He liked to get those negatives a little bit thicker, a little more dense. So he was recommended basically, if you were going to use dilution B, to go for 8 minutes. And then with his method, which the method a lot of folks use, is to essentially double that. So that's the one I've been using, and I'm extremely happy with. So basically, it's a longer development time. If I was using water coming out of the tap at, say, 68 degrees or 20 Celsius, I would be shooting for 16 minutes. Long time to wait for just the first part of developing your film. But luckily, especially now in the summer, I can't even get 68 degree water coming out of my tap. It's coming out now at least closer to 75 degrees. So that actually speeds it up. So essentially, if I'm going from 20 Celsius to 24, that time of 16 minutes comes down a bit. And I just use the Massive Dev app to calculate the adjustable times. So HC10, the gooey stuff, the gooey goodness coming out with a very diluted amount. And then the other part of the interesting areas around using this developer is some folks really like to agitate very, very little with it. And then using these terms like a stand development, or in this case, a semi-stand development, and how that will affect both your highlights and your areas and the shadows and the detail you want to bring out of them. So there was a lot of experimentation the first almost the first 2 months of using this developer, and it was fun. I had a good time trying dilution B and then going into dilution H and then just trying slight variations in the agitation. And what I ended up coming up with was fairly easy, basically just shaking that guy up carefully the first 30 seconds. So basically giving the first initial agitation 30 seconds, and then just at the top of each minute, each successive minute, just doing maybe three agitations, essentially like another 8 or 10 seconds. And I found that that worked out fine. I found like I was getting fairly consistent results, and I think using this high dilution, not really agitating it very much, again, just backing off on what Kodak recommends, because Kodak recommends lots of shaking and baking. Their agitation schemes are pretty much rigorous agitation for 30 seconds every minute. But backing off on that, I definitely saw that one of the features of the developer and really this film kind of got backed off a little bit in a good way, so that there's less contrast in the highlights. The highlights could be held a little bit more, so you didn't get such strong contrast in the highlights. But at the same time, since the I guess they call it the compensating effect of using a diluted developer, once the shadows are good from the darker parts of the image, they don't get touched really. They don't really get affected. So yeah, I found that this is a great workaround. And just before we get into, if you guys are still here, still listening, I'm going to redirect you to the website, my Google Photo album, to take a look at some of the examples. One of just the crazy things to think about with this film, I'm sorry, this film developer, is an initial purchase of, say, 500 milliliters will just last forever because you're just using so little of this developer each time you cook up some film. And it will just stay in your shelf wherever you keep it without going bad, without expiring. So it's one of those rare instances in life where you discover something absolutely brilliant and literally one of the best ways to use a artistic, or in this case a film, technique that is also the cheapest. How often do you see that? How often do you see, like, oh yeah, and if you really want to get the best tool to help contribute to your photography, yeah, no, don't go at, you know, find this bottle and one purchase of it's probably going to last you years. Anyway, we'll come back just after this short break and take a look at some of these photos using this Beauty and the Beast combo. Okay, so if you've made it this far, let's take a look at some of the shots. Let's see if what we put up here, what I put up here, can maybe convince you. So I've got three photos using this exact combination, and I do have a photo of the combo. And the first one, if you've made it to my photo site for Bringing It All Back Home on Google here, let's take a look at the first one. So the first one, these are all photos taken of folks I used to work with at the pier. This first one is Tyler. And take a look at the sharpness. You know, there's just, it's one of those photos where, like, if you zoom in, you're getting sharpness not only on Tyler's very cool beard and curly hair there coming out of his hoodie, but even the skin tones, even the pores in the side of his left side of his face, just remarkable. And yeah, in this one, I really loved some of the slightly blown out whites of the sun hitting the side of the pier, but then we're in open shade, and yeah, this is absolutely one of my all-time favorite versions of using this combination. Yeah, so then we'll head over to the next one. This is Peter Bruno. Another shot facing the opposite direction, essentially. And yeah, we've got a lot of tonality here, ranging from, you know, those nice grays coming from the background blur, but also to the way the sun is bouncing around coming from Peter's left. We can see where we're, you know, there are some blocked highlights at the very far back, but really amazing sharpness. I mean, just, you know, you can absolutely, as you zoom in, or in my case, I'm just pinching in on the photo. You're seeing, again, incredible detail in Peter's beard, in his eyebrows, even his eyes, the eyelashes, the whole thing. Really super combination there. Again, this is partly because of the lens, but this is also very much because of the film I'm using. If I was using Kodak right now, it would have a different, sort of a different effect. If I was using Kodak Tri-X, but Tri-X is still wonderful as well. I would, and not in any way trying to cash in on using Tri-X with this combo, but there's something great about this one. Again, the T-Max 100. And then the last shot, this is also one of my favorites. This is Mike, you know, Mike Brunner, and these shots were, especially this one, was taken just before our store at the pier closed, and there's a kind of melancholy to a lot of these shots. A lot of us were like, well, okay, this may be the last time we're going to see each other for quite a while, because some folks either didn't come back to the company I work for, or they moved to a different store or other part of the country. But yeah, take a look at the sharpness, take a look at the tonality, and I just really love the way it rendered the whites in Peter's beard, in Mike's beard. Just really interesting change in the tonality between the whites and grays there. And lastly, yeah, if you make it to the last shot, this is the combo. So there is my medium format version of Kodak T-Max, that little yellow guy there on the right, you can see part of the T-Max, I'm sorry, part of the Pentax 6.7 handle, which brings it all together. And you can see a close-up of the lens. You know, this is the legendary 105 2.4. And then on the left, that's the actual one of my amber bottles that I'm keeping the gooey goodness of AC-110. And of course, yeah, this is my 6.7 Pentax. So anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed this. I hope this can inspire you perhaps on working with medium format. There will be more a couple more analog combos to come. I think I'm going to tackle Leica next. And thanks again for listening. Please leave a message if you want through the Anchor app. And please subscribe. And just letting you know, this is available through the Apple Podcasts. It's also available on Spotify. And both those should be able to show you the link to these photos. Yeah, hopefully you can make it there and let me know either through Facebook or through the Anchor voicemail what you thought. That'd be great. Anyway, this is Charles. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.